You are listening to One Nation Under Crime, a historical, chronological true crime podcast. Each week, we go through our nation's history and discuss cases from each year starting in 1800. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Leah.
We've discussed.
Oh, dear.
Leah never knows the title of these cases.
I never do. And you make me nervous when you start things like this.
I'm only saying this because the name of our person, their last name, we'll get there. And it is...
Is it Borden?
No, but it is it is unfortunate.
The last name is unfortunate?
So,
no.
We'll get there. Our sources for this week, we have Deadly Women.
Ooh.
I mean, just to start out.
Barracuda.
And The Private History and Confession of Pamela Lee. Her married last name is the one that'll get you. But we'll get there.
Okay.
So, interesting. Our births in 1851. January 17th, we have Arthur Burdett Frost, a.k.a. A.B. Frost. He was an illustrator, graphic artist, painter, and comics writer. Best known for his illustrations of Br'er Rabbit.
Oh.
And he was a pioneer in the development of comic strips.
Very cool.
He was a Capricorn. April 13th, we have Robert Abe. He was a surgeon and a pioneer radiologist in New York City. He was a world-renowned surgeon in plastic surgery and was friends with Marie Curie.
Very cool.
He is also one of the first to name tobacco as a cause of cancer. Hmm. Very interesting. He's the Aries.
Didn't catch on very quick.
No. But he actually did a lot of radiology work, and that's how he became friends with Marie Curie.
Makes sense.
Yep.
I have some friends that are radiologists now.
This next person, this name... If you have to own this name, if this is your name, like this is one of those names where like you just got to lean in.
Okay.
It's one of those where you're just like,
oh no,
you got to be a strong individual to have this name.
Kinda like a boy named Sue?
Kind of. Yes.
Okay.
June 24th. Stuyvesant Fish. Was born. He was a businessman and president of the Illinois Central Railroad. He was known for having grand residences in New York City and Rhode Island, where he entertained others lavishly with his wife, whose name was Mammy. That's what his nickname for her was, and everyone called her Mammy, M-A-M-I-E.
Maybe it was Mamie. There's a lady that...
I don't like it.
Well, there's a lady that I know right now, and her name is Mamie.
Well, that's what her nickname was. And they were a part of prominent society.
Oh, upper crust.
During the Gilded Age. I knew you'd like that. He was a Cancer. August 14th. This is not the person that I chose for our person this week, but it's only because we're going to talk about him later. Do you know? Well, you will know when I say the last name.
The Muffin Man?
No.
No.
The Muffin Man?
The Muffin Man. Thank you.
Well, she's married to the Muffin Man.
The Muffin Man?
The Muffin Man!
Not my gumdrop buttons. We could do this all day, guys.
Oh, gosh. August 14th. John Henry Holliday, a.k.a. Doc Holliday. He was a gambler, gunfighter, and dentist who was friends with Wyatt Earp.
Good job.
It always gets me. It always looks like somebody was typing his name and then went, Earp. Oh.
One minute. Where's
that? Can't undo that. All right.
My sister had a dog named after Doc Holliday. Like, his name was Doc Holliday.
Well, if anybody's wondering why, He is best known for his role in the events surrounding the gunfight at the OK Corral. He was a Leo, and we will talk. That's going to be a whole episode. So
I'll save my stories.
That was why we didn't get to that today.
Val Kilmer played him.
Did watch Blazing Saddles the other night. I've seen it before. It's been a long time, but such a... people could get away with a lot back in the day.
You could change your identity.
First 5 minutes of that movie, there were some things said that the shock on my face was genuine. I did not. I think I had watched it on TV before.
I don't know if that's one that I've really watched.
Yeah, you haven't. Trust me. Because you would know what I'm talking. But it was like outwardly very racist. And I was like.
And at the time.
Oh. That is not like I was uncomfortable, and that was enough. So anyways, if you're going to watch that, just know. So our next person, October 20th, his name is George Shepherd Gandy. And it was noted that his nickname was Dad.
Dad?
Dad. Everybody like called
his
him Dad.
His friends call him
yeah,
Dad?
Yeah, everybody called him Dad. He's a business executive and developer known for constructing the original Gandy Bridge, which was the first bridge to span Tampa Bay in Florida.
Oh.
He is a Libra. December 10th. This is another, it's a very long name. You have to do some names, like you got to do good stuff or something with that name. December 10th. Melville Lewis Cusseth Dewey.
Well,
yep. He was a librarian and educator who, like I said, you got to do something fancy with a name
Dewey
like that.
Decimal system.
That is him. And that is the system of library classification. He is also the founder of the Lake Placid Club, which all I can think of is that horror movie with the alligator. Yeah. But, it was actually like an internationally renowned resort. So
until the alligators took over.
Yeah, until that. And he was also the chief librarian at Columbia University. He's a Sagittarius.
Smart cookie.
Our deaths in 1851, January 17th, we have Thomas Lincoln, father and farmer. I switched those around. I almost said... father and farmer of Abraham Lincoln. No. Nope. Y'all get it.
Strike that. Yep. Reverse it.
July 6th, Thomas Davenport. He was a Vermont blacksmith who constructed the first American DC electric motor in 1834. Ooh. September 10th, Thomas Hopkins Gaudet. He was an American educator who co-founded the first permanent institute for the education of the deaf in North America, which is known as the American School for the Deaf.
That's awesome.
September 11th, Sylvester Graham died. He was a Presbyterian minister and dietary reformer known for his emphasis on vegetarianism, the temperance movement, and only eating whole grain bread, which first of all, okay. We got to get into this. One, you're vegetarian. Fine. I've gone a while without eating meat. I've done it for like 6 months. I get it. I don't hate it. But you're going to not have meat and alcohol. Like we're taking both. Okay. Sounds good. He's known as the father of vegetarianism. And his preaching inspired Graham flour, Graham bread, and Graham cracker products.
Now, I do like some Graham crackers.
I mean, I like Graham crackers.
With some
but,
peanut butter.
You know.
So that's a good snack. I need to get some Graham crackers.
You need to get the cinnamon Graham crackers with
those
peanut butter.
Too.
That's the best.
September
14th, James Fenimore Cooper. He's a writer known for his historical romances depicting colonists and indigenous characters.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. From the 17th and 19th centuries, you might know him for his most famous work, The Last of the Mohicans.
Yep. Yes. That was back in Mel Gibson's heyday.
Yes. Our person of interest for 1851 is Walter Reed. His name might sound very familiar to you, and it is for good reason. To start, Walter Reed was born in, I think it's Belroy or Belroy. It has to be Belroy. B-E-L-R-O-I. Virginia. On September 13th of 1851, making him a Virgo.
Like me.
He was the fifth child to parents Lemuel Sutton Reed, who was a traveling Methodist minister, and Farabah White. That is a name. The family lived in Murfreesboro, North Carolina, and today Reed's childhood home is a part of the Murfreesboro Historic District. After the Civil War, Reed enrolled at the University of Virginia and completed his medical degree in 1869. He completed it 2 months before he turned 18, making him the youngest ever recipient of a medical degree from the University of Virginia.
Wow.
He then went to New York University's Bellevue Hospital Medical College in Manhattan and earned his second medical degree in 1870. And then he interned at several hospitals in New York City and worked for the New York Board of Health until 1875. In 1876, he married Emily Blackwell Lawrence, and the two shared three children, which, here we go. His name's Walter Reed, right? Her name was Emily Blackwell Lawrence, okay? They had three children. Well.
Thought you said five.
No, he's one of five.
Oh.
They have three children.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Walter Lawrence Reed.
Okay.
So her last name, his first name, you know, there's an Emily Lawrence Reed.
What?
We're not coming up with new names. They're just taking ours. But then they also had a daughter whose name was Susie Reed. Now, their last child, Susie, was a Native American who was adopted while Walter was posted at a frontier camp during his time in the U.S. Army Medical Corps. I tried to find more information on how this happened.
Mm-hmm.
I could not find anything on
that is interesting.
What was going on. But it just said that she was Native American and they adopted her. So I don't know if it's a situation of her parents were killed or what happened, but so I don't know if that portion of him is problematic. That's what I'm saying. Okay. So I tried to figure it out and couldn't.
And that's the information we have.
Yeah, exactly. Joining the Army Medical Corps allowed Walter to have a few benefits that he didn't get outside of military service. His young age in his profession wasn't of any benefit to him at all. And after passing a 30-hour exam, in 1875, he was enlisted as an assistant surgeon. During one of his last tours in the Army, he completed advanced coursework in pathology and bacteriology at Johns Hopkins University Hospital Pathology Laboratory. And then in 1893, Reed joined the faculty of the George Washington University School of Medicine and the newly opened Army Medical School in Washington, D.C., where he held the professorship of bacteriology and clinical microscopy. Guy's a little smart.
I mean, sounds like he might know a couple things.
Yes. In 1896, Reed first distinguished himself as a medical investigator. He proved that yellow fever among enlisted men stationed near the Potomac River was not a result of drinking the river water. He showed officials that the enlisted men who got yellow fever had a habit of taking trails through the local swampy woods at night. Their fellow officers without yellow fever did not do so. Reed also proved that the local civilians drinking from the Potomac River had no relation to the incidence of the disease. Later in May of 1900, a series of experiments were carried out to test out Reed's theory on yellow fever. This dangerous, extremely dangerous research was done using human volunteers including some of the medical personnel who allowed themselves to be bitten by mosquitoes infected with yellow fever.
Ooh.
Yeah. Which is insane to me. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, go ahead.
My arm.
Go for it. Ugh. The conclusions from this research were soon applied in Panama, where mosquito eradication was largely responsible for stemming the incidence of yellow fever during the construction of the Panama Canal.
Mm-hmm.
Although Reed received much of the credit for, like, figuring all of this out, he actually credited a Cuban medical scientist, Carlos Finlay, for identifying a mosquito as a vector of yellow fever and proposing how the disease could be controlled. So
he
did it. I mean, he did it, but he talked to this doctor who was basically like, hey, I think this is...
And he shared credit.
Mm-hmm, and said, oh, no. Like,
he was not a Sheldon Cooper.
Like, I did the medical research, maybe, but, like, this guy's the one with the idea, essentially. Like, yeah, that's how this occurred.
Off him. Yeah. Like, it wasn't all me.
It wasn't just me.
Well, good for him.
Mm-hmm. Reed often cited Finlay in his own articles and gave him credit for the idea in his personal correspondences. Reed returned from Cuba in 1901, continuing to speak and publish on the topic of yellow fever. In recognition of his research, Reed received honorary degrees from Harvard and the University of Michigan.
That's awesome.
In November of 1902, Reed suffered a ruptured appendix, and he died on November 23rd, 1902, ooh, of the resulting peritonitis at the age of only 51.
And all, but I mean, yes, he was young, but look at what all he had done because he started so young. I mean, that's amazing.
He was buried in Arlington National Cemetery, and in 1912, he posthumously, that's such a word, received what came to be known as the Walter Reed Medal in recognition of his work to combat yellow fever. A tropical medicine course is also named after him, which is the Walter Reed Tropical Medicine Course. There are over 10 different medical institutes that are named after him as well, including, this is where everybody usually knows the name from, the Walter Reed General Hospital in Washington, D.C. So, bit of an interesting guy.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, we should probably talk about him.
Who did a lot in a few years.
So much stuff. So much. So, very, very interesting. So, on to our case.
But can I just say one thing? Hmm. Of all things, a ruptured appendix.
Right? Is what takes you out. Yeah.
Dr. Mann?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly. October of 1851. You're about to find out the last name now.
Okay.
Pamela Lee Worms.
Oh. Like.
Worms.
Worms, like.
Does spelled the same way.
Crawlers.
Spelled worms. The same way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, bless.
Worms.
Oh, bless. Worms.
Was accused of murdering her husband.
How does one get the last name Worms? I mean, like, you
I
know,
don't
they,
know.
They come from somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll get there.
Okay, I'm sorry.
This is an interesting
Worms.
This is an interesting story.
I'd have to change it.
I'll also say this. Some of what we know from this story mainly comes from her, like, life and confession that she did when she was convicted for murder and all that. Okay. So one portion of it is written solely by her.
Okay.
The other portion was written by a minister. And I don't know exactly how he got all of his information, but her recount of some things was very different than what he said.
And that tends to happen.
So we'll get there. Pamela Lee was born on December 19th, 1815. She was a Welsh immigrant who was raised by her uncle after the sudden death of her father before coming to the United States. In her early years, she was doted on incessantly by her relatives and attended the finest schools in Wales until her uncle fell on some hard times, and she had to return home to attend a district school. Well, this didn't sit well with Pamela.
I mean, being treated like a commoner after being treated mm-hmm. like a princess, I get it.
It follows her through her life. It doesn't do her well. She was known to insult the other children in the school, saying they were inferior to her, and eventually had herself expelled from school due to all of the trouble that she was causing.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Even though Pamela initially grew up in a life of luxury, by the time she was a teen, there wasn't much left of the glamorous life she once had. By the time she was 18, she had been proposed to by a Reverend Wakefield. They never say his first name.
Hmm.
Never. I know he was a preacher and he was Reverend Wakefield, but they never say his first name. So
that's intriguing.
When I say Mr. Wakefield, like that's all we know him as, like at all. It was just weird. She didn't initially accept his proposal due to the fact that he was quite a bit older than her and he only made about £500 a year. But the more Pamela thought about the marriage, she started to shift her thinking when she realized that he did have a really good family name. And that did have a pretty good amount of weight to it, even though it didn't come with money initially.
Mm.
Pamela ended up marrying him, but it wasn't long until the Reverend became disillusioned with her arrogance. He tried some counseling to intervene, but it didn't do any good, and he resigned that this would be their life and they lived together. He might as well settle with it, I guess. You know, just here we are.
So she wasn't a Disney princess. Mm. She was a bad princess.
About 6 years after their marriage, Wakefield's uncle died and the Reverend inherited his estate in Ireland. He immediately left the church and took Pamela with him to the Irish country. Pamela was not happy with this move and hated living in Ireland as well as the people around them.
Oh.
It's unknown whether she hated them first or if it was her attitude that caused them to not like her, but either way, it wasn't a good fit.
Well, perhaps it was a combination.
Yeah. Pamela was living the life of luxury that she once enjoyed before, even though they could not afford it.
Ruh-roh.
Yep. Wakefield tried to rein her in with her spending, but that only caused further arguments between the two of them. Eventually, running the estate became too much, and the couple moved back to Wales. I couldn't find anything about their first two children, but at this point, sources say that there was a third child born when they got to Wales. So, like literally no talk of two children, but then it was like,
unimportant.
And then their third child was born. I was like, okay. All right. Yeah. Once they arrived back, they lived in a quaint mountainous town that was known to have quite a bit of tourism due to its ideal hunting and fishing lodges. From what I could gather, the couple opened up kind of like a bed and breakfast.
She had to work.
Yeah. And so, but it was said that she was a really good host. Like she was really great in that way. Maybe too great.
She liked entertaining.
In the private history and confession of Pamela Lee, it was said, quote, Miss Wakefield, regardless of her husband's monetary embarrassments, after much discussion on the subject of economy, which met stormy opposition, Mr. Moffat, a man of unlimited wealth and doubtful moral character, became a favorite guest, which aroused Mr. Wakefield's suspicions of foul play. On January 27th of 1843, Mary Hoyt, she was one of the domestic servants. We also never get Moffat's first name. So just
Moffat.
Moffat. Which reminds me of a Muppet. Mary Hoyt was one of the domestic servants in the house. And she received orders from Pamela to have breakfast ready early the next morning because Mr. Moffat was going hunting. Pamela's husband had been out of town for a few days up to this point. Mary went down the stairs early the next morning, and as she went to open the door to the room, she noticed the handle moved. And scared that she bothered Pamela, she ran down the hall to avoid her.
Well, I don't want to mess with her.
Yeah, no. She was like, yeah. Mr. Wakefield had returned home, and he immediately went to Mary, asking where Pamela was. Mary said that she didn't know, but she would go and see if she could find her, and... While Mr. Wakefield stood in the hall waiting, as Mary carelessly looked around and avoided the door, to the room she knew Pamela was in. She was just like, oh, weird. She's not in this cupboard.
Nope, not under this chair.
Weird. No, did you? Is she behind? Nope, she's not standing behind you. Weird.
No.
Weird. Finally, she had no choice, and she opened the door to the room to find Pamela with Mr. Moffat.
They were having tea.
Yep. Mr. Wakefield stood there unmoving in shock at the scene before him. He looked to Mary and calmly told her to leave immediately. Mr. Moffat, seemingly unfazed by the scene, called his servant and asked him to saddle his horse, just like casually. Like, he just didn't really care. He was like, okay.
Hey, dude, hubby's home. Gotta go.
Gotta go. G2G. Soon after the incident, Mr. Wakefield divorced Pamela.
I mean, with due cause.
She was thrown out of the house and wandered around Wales for a bit, being supported by Mr. Moffat. She was writing to Mr. Wakefield to reconcile, and she wanted to see her children, but none of them were answered. She was seen in public, frantic and crying, which was noticed quickly by the town, and she was placed in an asylum for 6 months.
Mm.
Yeah.
She had food.
I mean,
and a place to sleep.
Once she left the asylum, she tried to go back to her husband, but she was turned away by him again.
I mean, can you blame him?
Yeah. He finally offered her £50 of payment per year if she left the country and never came back.
I mean,
like, I'll pay you to leave us alone. Well, she took the money and decided to move to America.
Go on, take the money and run.
On May 15th of 1845, she arrived in New Orleans. This was Pamela's chance to reinvent herself and shed the misery of her previous life behind her. Once she arrived in New Orleans, she started to hang around the more fashionable circles and made quite the name for herself. After all, she was able to talk the talk after she grew up in an upper-class home for some time. So she was able to kind of, you know, finagle her way into it.
Yeah, she knew how to play the game and how to fit in.
This was when she met a wealthy man by the name of Moses Worms.
I mean, y'all, worms. Can you not change it? I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah. So he proposed to Pamela. His family was quite well known in the mercantile industry. And when he met Pamela, he was visiting New Orleans with his family. The couple was married in October of the same year. They did not waste any time getting married. Like, she arrived in May and they were married by October.
I mean, so, you know.
Girls got to eat, I guess. We'll see that soon. So, yeah. Moses was a bit older than her as well, and it wasn't long before his children started to express their distaste in the wife that their father had chosen. They took care to note that she was more interested in his money than him. Pamela made it her mission to separate Moses from his family and drive a wedge between them to make him more reliant on her.
I have a song. I ain't saying she a gold.
I mean, Yep. Yeah. Well, it gets worse than just a gold digger. Even though they had initially settled in New Orleans, the continued strife between Pamela and Moses' children caused Moses to sell the home in New Orleans and move to Chicago with two of his children.
Bye.
Yep. One day, the son disappeared while Moses was away on business. His daughter came home from school and asked Pamela where her younger brother was. Pamela said that he had gone out to the woods to go hunting, but as the day passed by and he didn't return, concerns grew among the neighbors. Much to Pamela's surprise, one day a group of men arrived at the house to search the woods for the young boy. On the second day of their search, they found him drowned in a nearby pond.
Oh, no.
This was the same day that Moses returned home from his business trip.
Oh, that's a very sad homecoming.
Yeah. Later, Pamela admitted to drowning the boy in an attempt to strengthen her relationship with Moses and secure her spot in his will.
What?
In the summer of 1847, a relative of Moses came to visit after the death of her husband before heading to New Orleans. Immediately upon the relative's arrival, Pamela started poisoning her slowly, while she also stole money and other valuables when the woman wasn't lucid enough to pay attention.
I mean,
oh, it get just
Pamela.
Yeah.
Did somebody drop her on her head?
Possibly. After her death, Moses was suspicious and started to consider going back to New Orleans. Well, this would not work for Pamela, so she started slowly poisoning the other child they had brought with them.
I mean, kids, you're killing kids.
She poisoned her slowly for 6 months before she finally died.
I mean, guys.
Yeah.
I'm the person, like, when I think I sent you this meme, you know, like in horror movies, person gets killed, but how's the dog? Mm-hmm. Is the dog okay?
Yeah.
Or is the kid okay? Mm-hmm. Like, dogs and kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, critters and kids.
Right.
Just
yeah.
saying.
Yeah. Well, by this point, Moses was determined to get back to New Orleans, but he wouldn't go without his children's remains to bury them in New Orleans. But there was a cholera outbreak at this time in New Orleans, and there weren't any boats that were going in or out of New Orleans to try and, like, not spread the sickness even further.
Which, you know, safety.
Yeah. So the couple decided to tour the eastern seaboard in the meantime, and the family doctor agreed, which made Moses agree with the plan altogether. He was basically like, Moses was super depressed, and like, so he, the family doctor was like, y'all need to get away, go out of town. Like, yeah. So that's what they did. During this time, Pamela started to wonder about her husband and his thoughts concerning her. He was pretty secretive himself, and this is when she came up with a plan.
She's like, is he on to me? Does he realize I killed all these people?
In the private history and confession of Pamela Lee, Pamela wrote, this is her herself, quote, I thought how singular and cunning my husband managed to conceal his business and correspondence from me. I sprung to my feet, dressed, and immediately repaired to a locksmith. I don't know why it says repaired, but that's what it said. Who accompanied me back and flung open my husband's desk, to which I looked into for the first time, where I found, amongst other things new to me, quite a number of letters from New Orleans, from which I could perceive that my husband felt alarm for my mental stability and meditated a separation from me at no distant day, which project me with hearty response from his family. I carefully placed the papers as I found them and locked the desk as before and left the house deeply afflicted.
I mean, she'd been in an asylum before. Mm. I mean, probably she needed some help.
By September of 1848, the couple traveled to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they stayed at the St. Charles Hotel. While there, Pamela convinced Moses to purchase a cute little cottage that was about a mile outside of the city. A woman by the name of Anne Thomas came to stay with the couple. Anne was a friend of the Worms family for quite a while, and she served as a housekeeper for Moses for several years previously. It wasn't long after she arrived that Pamela decided she could not stay around much longer. One night, Anne went to bed, and Pamela made her a drink with a heavy dose of laudanum in it. Pamela made a fire in her room, put some extra coals on the fire, and made sure to shut up the room tight for the evening. When Pamela opened the door the next morning, Anne was dead. So she basically suffocated her in the room with the fire to where, like,
awesome.
The smoke would billow through the room, and that's how she died. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
She's pretty creative.
Yeah. Moses was out on business, so Pamela disposed of Anne's body before he returned home. When he arrived back and asked about Anne, Pamela told him that Anne stole $100 from her, as well as some jewelry and silks, and she left. Well, Moses was shocked by these accusations and insisted that this couldn't be true because Anne was entrusted with thousands of dollars before and she never took anything. Moses asked how much in total she had taken, and Pamela told him it was around $500. But Moses refused to go after Anne, and Pamela was pleased, thinking that would be the end of it. Well, Moses' suspicions continued to grow around all of the death that had surrounded him in the previous months and years. He started to push Pamela farther and farther away, and she could see what was happening. In October,
that was his mistake.
Yep. In October of 1851, Moses Worms suddenly died. Pamela's life went quickly downhill as rumors about her began to circulate, and an autopsy determined that Moses had been poisoned with several different lethal substances.
Oh, no.
It didn't stop there either. Pamela thought that she would be able to inherit her husband's fortune and she would be set to live an independent life. What she didn't know is that Moses realized when he was getting sick that his wife was most likely to blame, and before his death, he disinherited her entirely without her knowledge.
Ooh.
Pamela was subsequently convicted in the murder of Moses Worms and was sentenced to death by hanging. But accounts vary as to how Pamela Lee Worms actually died. Some sources claim she was hanged in January of 1852. Others claim she died of natural causes while awaiting execution. And some say she might have even completed suicide.
I mean, how do we not know this? How do we not know how?
All the sources say something different. I think that the main thing that people fall on is that she died like in her cell of some natural causes. What we do know is that while awaiting execution, Pamela confessed her entire story to a pastor and showed no emotion or remorse for what she had done. And that is Pamela Lee Worms.
She needed to be in an institution because that is that sociopathic?
Sociopath?
Yeah.
I think that
remorse. Yeah, they're similar. Because, I mean, showing absolutely
I think she would possibly be classified as a sociopath.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Because she's like, well, it made sense to me. I wanted this, and so I did this.
The reason that I said, like, that her writings were so wildly different from the story, there's a reason I'm going with what the pastor or the clergyman said that wrote her original thing, because she claims, which knowing how the rest of her life went, this is why I don't believe what she says, which like I understand people are like, don't, you know, need to listen to women when they say these things. This is a very different situation. She claims that when she was in Europe and they were running the bed and breakfast, that her husband asked her to
entertain
Mr. Moffat because he had a lot of money in the hopes of getting like a loan from him.
Keeping him happy.
Yes.
And entertain him in whatever way he requested.
And basically said that once they received the money, that was when he kicked her out of the house. There's a few things that cause me to not believe that. One, he took the kids.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, he was a clergyman. Not that that means anything. We're very well aware of that. But
And especially in that time, because if you were a family, if you were in a family of, you know, credibility of, you know, a noble family, you know, if you weren't the elder son, then you didn't get the estate. And so a lot of times, I mean, there wasn't any real money for subsequent sons. And so you went to the army or you went to the church. I mean, those were your choices.
And so like we know, which, little bit of insight into next week's case. We know that it doesn't really mean anything if you're a reverend. Again, hint, hint for next week.
It should.
But so I'm not saying because that, like, he was of high moral standard just because of that, but he took the kids, wouldn't let her see that. Like, so there's,
like, he's like, I'm keeping you away from these children. You're not going to damage them further.
It doesn't seem to me that someone who would do that would try and convince his wife to force herself on another man for a loan.
He does seem to be of
he does the seem moral to be yeah from what we can
want him to be.
Right. So she that's why which we all know there's three sides to every story. There's yours, mine, and the truth. And that's why I was kind of trying to using the person who wrote the first part of her confession is like kind of the quote truth of it, because
right,
it was just, I mean, she said so many wild things, but she did in her writings, she admitted to killing the kids. She admitted to killing the other two women. Like, she admitted to all of it. So,
I mean, which do you think? And here's, I'm thinking. So first of all, she was so spoiled in the beginning of her life. Mm-hmm. And because her parents died when she was young, right?
So that's, the story's also murky there too. And I couldn't find enough to figure out what happened. I believe her father, I'm pretty sure from what I remember, her father did die. Her mother did not. Her mother remarried, but the mother's new husband
wanted his own kids.
Didn't want kids at all. So she went to go live with
deal breaker.
An aunt and uncle.
And so here's my thought. She has been on this pedestal mm-hmm. and been, they felt so sorry for her. Mm-hmm. They made everything how she wanted it mm-hmm. and created a monster of a child.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I've seen this.
She got kicked out of school because she was telling the other kids that she was better than them.
Right. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. Like, that she had been told all of her life how wonderful mm-hmm. and how she deserved this and she deserved that. And so that became her inner speech, mm-hmm. you know? And so she deserved this. And so where the sociopath comes in for me, I'm not a psychiatrist, we know this, but I'm thinking, mm-hmm. you know, she had been told she deserves these things, she deserves. And so the crimes, the murders that she committed, they were just means to an end because this is what she deserved. And she was just keeping what she deserved. She was just getting what she deserved. She didn't, you know what I mean? She didn't understand. Now, I understand that murder's wrong. Murder's bad. We know this. Mm-hmm. But I can see that could be the way her brain was working.
And that was why I kind of felt that it was like necessary to go all the way back to her beginning instead of just when she got to America.
Yeah. Because that's damaging being, you know, hey, my father died. My mom just kind of tossed me out because my daddy didn't want me.
And one thing that I did see in one source was that when she did get out of the asylum in Europe, before she tried to go back to her husband, ex-husband, she tried to go stay with her mother, and her mother turned her away too.
See, that's what I'm saying. There's more to the story that we don't know. And, you know, and people, we always say now, even if, I mean, people mm-hmm. make poor choices and do bad things, but there's always a reason why you can, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not saying it excuses.
No.
But
you can see how circumstances can cause.
Right. You see how the chips fell, mm-hmm. if you will, you know, mm-hmm. or how the dominoes just lined up perfectly.
Yeah. You can kind of see the mm-hmm. series of unfortunate events that, not mm-hmm. Lemony Snickets, but you can see the ones that got this person to this point.
Yeah. I mean, feeling so unwanted with the ones that were supposed to want her and mm-hmm. then being overcompensated with the other, you deserve. You know, I mean, that, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it was very odd. So that is the story of Pamela Lee Worms.
Worms. So
in, this is just, to kind of let everybody know, we're recording a lot of episodes today because Leah is going out of town. And so
yes, I am.
Typically, usually by this point, I don't already have like everything written out for the next like few weeks because I'm writing and working and, you know.
You know, she's a real person. This isn't her everyday
being
job.
A parent. All those things. If y'all want to support our Patreon, it could be a real job. Anyways.
I mean, this is true.
But so our next episode, I'll say a reverend is involved. Mm-hmm. And then the episode after that, we have another very unfortunate name that Leah is going to love because it is so bad.
Oh, no.
And
It's bad. So
I'm going to create a whole persona. Is that what you're telling me? Like just from the name?
The name, yes. And it is such an unfortunate name for, it's the one that I was finishing up when you got here. It's okay. Such an unfortunate name to be, I'll say this, very well known in the state's history that we're going to talk about.
Oh.
And even when I said, I told my boyfriend, I was like, your name is blank and this is what you do. So this name now forever is associated with this and your name is this. Like, what? It's pretty bad. So we'll get to that point as well. But yes, Leah is abandoning me and she's going to, you know, total opposite side of the country to get away from me. It's fine.
Not to get away from you. It's to see people I love.
It's fine.
And possibly get to go to Disneyland. So I'll have gone from not being to the parks
to both of them.
In the same calendar
year. I know.
I'm a little excited about that.
I mean, I can see.
That it may fall through. I mean, we may just do like the zoo or
just SeaWorld. The zoo. I mean, it's fine. Well, we have a website where you can find any and all ONUC information you are looking for. It is onenationundercrime.com. And again, you can become a Patreon if you want this to be my full-time job like myself. And you can help with the cost of making and hosting the show. We would greatly appreciate it. Also, go leave us a 5-star review.
Yes,
it
do
would
that.
Be wonderful.
That costs you nothing.
My birthday has already passed. Leah's is coming up.
Mine is coming up.
It's think of it as a present to both of us.
Yes.
We appreciate you guys so much for tuning in this week to One Nation Under Crime. We will see you here same time.
Different crime.
Next week. And remember, there isn't always liberty and justice for all, like, especially if your last name is Worms.
I mean,
that is some injustice.
That's so sad.
In this world. Goodbye.
Bye.